Chapter 38. Yes, the resemblances are curiously exact. I used to tell the story of the jumping frog in San Francisco, and presently Artemus Ward came along, and wanted to help fill out a little book which he was about to publish. So I wrote it out, and sent it to his publisher, Carlton. But Carlton thought the book had enough matter in it, so he gave the story to Henry Clapp as a present, and Clapp put it in his Saturday Press, apostrophe, and it killed that paper with a suddenness that was beyond praise. At least the paper died with that issue, and none but envious people have ever tried to rob me of the honor and credit of killing it. The Jumping Frog was the first piece of writing of mine that spread itself through the newspapers, and brought me into public notice. Consequently, the Saturday Presses was a cocoon and I the worm in it. Also, I was the gay-colored literary moth which its death set free. This simile has been used before. Early in 66 the Jumping Frog was issued in book form, with other sketches of mine. A year or two later Madame Blanc translated it into French, and published it in the Revue des Deux Mondes, apostrophe, but the result was not what should have been expected, for the Revue struggled along and pulled through, and is alive yet. I think the fault must have been in the translation. I ought to have translated it myself. I think so, because I examined into the matter, and finally retranslated the sketch from the French back into English, to see what the trouble was, that is, to see just what sort of a focus the French people got upon it. Then the mystery was explained. In French the story is too confused and chaotic, and unreposeful and ungrammatical and insane. Consequently it could only cause grief and sickness it could not kill. A glance at my retranslation will show the reader that this must be true. My retranslation. The frog jumping of the county of Calaveras, a bean. This smiley nourished some terriers, a rats, and some cocks of combat, and some cats, and all sorts of things. And with his rage of betting one though, had more of repose. He trapped one day a frog and him imported with him a l'importe chez lui, saying that he pretended to make his education. You may believe if you will, but during 3 months he not as nothing done, but to him apprehend to jump a prender a sauter in a court retired of her mansion de sa mason, and I you respond that he have succeeded. He him gives a small blow by behind, and the instant after you shall see the frog turn in the air like a grease biscuit, make one somersault, sometimes two, when she was well started, and refall upon his feet like a cat. He him had accomplished in the art of to gobble the flies, gober de mouches, and him there exercised continually so well, that a fly at the most far, that she appeared, was a fly lost. Smiley had custom to say that all which lacked to a frog it was the education, but with the education she could do nearly all, and I him believe. Tennis, I him have seen pose Daniel Webster there upon this plank. Daniel Webster was the name of the frog, and to him sing, some flies, Daniel, some flies. Apostrophe apostrophe in a fash of the eye Daniel had bounded, and seized a fly here upon the counter, then jumped anew at the earth, where he rested truly to himself scratch the head with his behind foot, as if he had not the least idea of his superiority. Never you not have seen frog as modest, as natural, sweet as she was. And when he himself agitated to jump purely and simply upon plain earth, she does more ground in one jump than any beast of his species than you can know. To jump plain, this was his strong. When he himself agitated for, that smiley multiplied the bests upon her, as long as there to him remained a red. It must to know, Smiley was monstrously proud of his frog, and he of it was right, for some men who were traveled, who had all seen, said that they to him would be injurious to him compared to another frog. Smiley guarded Daniel in a little box lattice which he carried bitums to the village for some bet. One day an individual stranger at the camp him arrested with his box and him said, "What is this, that you have then shut up there within?" Apostrophe apostrophe, Smiley said, with an air indifferent. That could be a parakeet, or a syringe, lancerin, but this no, is nothing of such, it not is but a frog. ... The individual it took, it regarded with care, it turned from one side, and from the other, then he said. Teens. In effect. At what is she good? ... My God. ... Responded Smiley, always with an air disengaged. She is good for one thing. To my notice, a ma navis, she can better in jumping elpute batter and sawtent all frogs of the county of Calaveras. ... The individual retook the box, it examined of new Lomley, and it rendered to Smiley in saying with an air deliberate. A bean. I no saw, not that that frog had nothing of better than each frog. ... Genie voice pause case et grenouille et rien de mieux qu'une grenouille. If that isn't grammar gone to seed, then I count myself no judge. M. T. Possible that you not it saw not, ... said Smiley. Possible that you comprehend frogs. Possible that you not you there comprehend nothing. Possible that you had of the experience. And possible that you not be but an amateur. Of all manner that out maniere, I bet $40 that she batter in jumping no matter which frog of the country of Calaveras. ... The individual reflected a second, and said like sad. I not am but a stranger here, I know of not a frog. But if I of it had one, I would embrace the bet. ... Strong, well. ... Respond Smiley. Nothing of more facility. If you will hold my box a minute, I go you to search a frog, dear I vouch churcher. ... Behold then, the individual who guards the box, who puts his $40 upon those of Smiley, and who attends a coui attender, he attended enough long times, reflecting all solely. And figure you, that he takes Daniel, him opens the mouth by force, and with a teaspoon him fills with shot of the hunt, even him fills just to the chin, then he him puts by the earth. Smiley during these times, was at slopping in a swamp. Finally he trapped Atrop, a frog, him carried to that individual, and said, now if you be ready, put them all against Daniel, with their before feet upon the same line, and I give the signal. Then he added, 1, 2, 3, advance. ... Him, and the individual touched their frogs by behind, and the frog knew put to jump smartly, but Daniel himself lifted ponderously, exalted the shoulders thus, like a Frenchman, to what good? He could not budge, he is planted solid like a church, he not advance no more, than if one him had put at the anchor. Smiley was surprised and disgusted, but he not himself doubted not of the turn, being intended, mais il n'y si doubted pas du tour bien entend, the individual implicated the silver, himself with it went, and of it himself in going is that he no gives not a jerk of thumb over the shoulder like that at the poor Daniel, in saying with his air deliberate, l'individu impich largent, sen va en sen allend est si qu'il n'y don pas un coup de pouce pas de ses l'épaule. Com circa, O pauvre Daniel, and Dyson, the son air delibere. A bean. I no see, not that that frog has nothing of better than another. ... Smiley himself scratched long times the head, the eyes fixed upon Daniel, until that which at last he said. I me demand how the devil it makes itself, that this beast has refused. Is it that as he had something? One would believe, that she is stuffed. ... He grasped Daniel by the skin of the neck, him lifted and said, the wolf me bite, if he no weigh not 5 pounds. ... He him reversed and the unhappy belched 2 handfuls of shot a la malheru, etc. When Smiley recognized how it was, he was like mad. He deposited his frog by the earth, and ran after that individual, but he not him caught never. It may be that there are people who can translate better than I can, but I am not acquainted with them. So ends the private and public history of the jumping frog of Calaveras County, an incident which has this unique feature about it that it is both old and new, a chestnut and not a chestnut. ...for it was original when it happened 2,000 years ago, and was again original when it happened in California in our own time. P.S.S. London, July, 1900. Twice, recently, I have been asked this question. Have you seen the Greek version of the Umping Frog? ...and twice I have answered no. ...has Professor Van Dyke seen it? ...I suppose so. ...then your supposition is at fault. ...why? ...because there isn't any such version. ...do you mean to intimate that the tale is modern, and not borrowed from some ancient Greek book? ...yes. It is not permissible for any, but the very young, and innocent to be so easily beguiled as you and Van Dyke have been. ...do you mean that we have fallen a prey to our ignorance and simplicity? ...yes. Is Van Dyke a Greek scholar? ...I believe so. ...then he knew where to find the ancient Greek version if one existed. Why didn't he look? Why did he jump to conclusions? ...I don't know. And was it worth the trouble, anyway? ...as it turns out now, it was not claimed that the story had been translated from the Greek. It had its place among other uncredited stories, and was there to be turned into Greek by students of that language. Greek prose composition, that title is what made the confusion. It seemed to mean that the originals were Greek. It was not well chosen, for it was pretty sure to mislead. Thus vanishes the Greek frog, and I am sorry. For he loomed fine and grand across the sweep of the ages, and I took a great pride in him. M.T.T. 1, Sidgwick, Greek Prose Composition, page 116. My military campaign, you have heard from a great many people who did something in the war. Is it not fair and right that you listen a little moment to one who started out to do something in it, but didn't? Thousands entered the war, got just a taste of it, and then stepped out again, permanently. These, by their very numbers, are respectable, and are therefore entitled to a sort of voice, not a loud one, but a modest one. Not a boastful one, but an apologetic one. They ought not to be allowed much space among better people, people who did something, I grant that. But they ought at least to be allowed to state why they didn't do anything, and also to explain the process by which they didn't do anything. Surely this kind of light must have a sort of value. Out west there was a good deal of confusion in men's minds during the first months of the Great Trouble, a good deal of unsettledness, of leaning first this way, then that, then the other way. It was hard for us to get our bearings. I call to mind an instance of this. I was piloting on the Mississippi when the news came that South Carolina had gone out of the Union on December 20, 1860. My pilot mate was a New Yorker. He was strong for the Union, so was one. But he would not listen to me with any patience. My loyalty was smirched, to his eye, because my father had owned slaves. I said, in palliation of this dark fact, that I had heard my father say, some years before he died, that slavery was a great wrong, and that he would free the solitary Negro he then owned, if he could think it right to give away the property of the family, when he was so straitened in means. My mate retorted, that a mere impulse was nothing anybody could pretend to a good impulse, and went on decrying my Unionism and libeling my ancestry. A month later the secession atmosphere had considerably thickened on the lower Mississippi, and I became a rebel, so did he. We were together in New Orleans, January 26, when Louisiana went out of the Union. He did his full share of the rebel shouting, but was bitterly opposed to letting me do mine. He said that I came of bad stock of a father who had been willing to set slaves free. In the following summer he was piloting a federal gunboat and shouting for the Union again, and I was in the Confederate Army. I held his note for some borrowed money. He was one of the most upright men I ever knew, but he repudiated that note without hesitation, because I was a rebel, and the son of a man who had owned slaves. In that summer of 1861, the first wash of the wave of war broke upon the shores of Missouri. Our state was invaded by the Union forces. They took possession of St. Louis, Jefferson Barracks, and some other points. The governor, Claib Jackson, issued his proclamation calling out 50,000 militia to repel the invader. I was visiting in the small town where my boyhood had been spent, Hannibal, Marion County. Several of us got together in a secret place by night and formed ourselves into a military company. One Tom Lyman, a young fellow of a good deal of spirit, but of no military experience, was made captain. I was made second lieutenant. We had no first lieutenant. I do not know why. It was long ago. There were 15 of us. By the advice of an innocent connected with the organization, we called ourselves the Marion Rangers. I do not remember that anyone found fault with the name. I did not. I thought it sounded quite well. The young fellow who proposed this title was perhaps a fair sample of the kind of stuff we were made of. He was young, ignorant, good-natured, well-meaning, trivial, full of romance, and given to reading chivalric novels and singing forlorn love ditties. He had some pathetic little nickel-plated aristocratic instincts, and detested his name, which was Dunlop. Detested it, partly because it was nearly as common in that region as Smith, but mainly because it had a plebeian sound to his ear. So he tried to ennoble it by writing it in this way. Dunlop. That contented his eye, but left his ear unsatisfied, for people gave the new name the same old pronunciation emphasis on the front end of it. He then did the bravest thing that can be imagined, a thing to make one shiver when one remembers how the world is given to resenting shams and affectations. He began to write his name so. Dunlap. And he waited patiently through the long storm of mud that was flung at this work of art, and he had his reward at last, for he lived to see that name accepted, and the emphasis put where he wanted it, by people who had known him all his life, and to whom the tribe of Dunlops had been as familiar as the rain and the sunshine for 40 years. So sure of victory at last is the courage that can wait. He said he had found, by consulting some ancient French chronicles, that the name was rightly and originally written Dunlap, and said that, if it were translated into English, it would mean Peterson. Lap, Latin or Greek, he said, for stone or rock, same as the French Pierre, that is to say, Peter, D, of or from, un, a or one, hence Dunlap, of or from a stone or a Peter, that is to say, one who is the son of, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.